Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, January 25th, 2016. And with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. How's it going, Brian?
It goes.
Yes. Yes, it does. And John Martellaro, I hope it goes for you as well.
Yes, I am. Go Broncos, in very good shape.
I'm so happy for you and your sports ball excitement. Yeah. Speaking of excitement, and Brian, what I'm doing is one of your segues.
Yep.
So how'd I do? It's all right. You're the master, and I will eventually be able to segue with the grace and aplomb that you do.
Kind of like a dodgy hippo.
Oh, man, I love their third album. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the Apple car, Brian, this is something that you've been following closely because you are one of the people that was getting news about what was potentially happening before it was even news.
It's true, but I didn't break this particular story.
No, but you always have interesting insight into the whole Apple car thing. So fill us in.
So Steve Zadesky, who was the head of the Apple car project, he was an iPhone guy, and before that he was an iPod guy. And before that, he was a Ford guy. He worked at Ford, Ford Motor Company, whatever the heck that corporation's called. He's been with Apple for 16 years, and he was the one who first started putting together the team to work on the feasibility of the Apple car. He is gone. He is soon to be gone. He's leaving, and this is all according to the Wall Street Journal. And what they said is that he's leaving for personal reasons. So he wasn't ousted from Apple, nor do we have any indication that he's leaving because he feels like there's a problem. And the people that I've talked to have essentially echoed that. They've said that he wasn't ousted and that he's leaving for his own personal reasons. But what we don't know is if those personal reasons were related to the car and frustration with the car, or if those personal reasons are like, you know, time for me to move on, or there's a family
like
issue.
To spend more time with family. Sure. Yeah.
I think one of the key indicators was when we heard that number 2020, and then slowly the number 2019 leaked out, as if perhaps Apple was accelerating the schedule, and maybe that has something to do with it.
It could. We have no evidence of that whatsoever.
No.
I mean, you know, it could also be that he wants a Herman Aron chair and he can't get one. I mean, we at this point, I don't have any idea, and the Wall Street Journal didn't have any idea of exactly why it is that he's leaving. We don't know if it's how big a problem this is going to be for Apple. If this is going to set the project back, it does seem like it would have some kind of impact on the development process, especially when it is as aggressive as it is. Mm-hmm. But
Tony Fadell said it was a big blow. Did you see that?
No, I did not see that.
Yeah, Tony Fadell sent out a tweet, and he thought it was a major blow to Apple. They had worked together. Yeah.
Huh. You know, I find it interesting that we have a big news thing, in this case, the head of the Apple Car Project leaving. But even though all of this is presumed fact, Apple still hasn't even announced that or confirmed that the car is happening. We know.
Oh, it's the worst kept secret in Silicon Valley.
Though, right.
It's just too many people involved.
Right. Yeah, there's just too many people involved. Yeah.
There's way too many fingers and eyes on this for it to stay secret.
Right. But I do find it kind of funny that a project that is still unannounced is losing its leader, who was never confirmed officially as in charge of the project that hasn't been announced?
Well, you know, this happened with the iPad. You know, it was announced in what, January of 2010 and shipped. Steve demoed it on the couch, right, at Macworld 2010. And then it shipped in April 2010. But I remember writing about the iPad in all through 2009. And the same thing happened with the Apple Watch. We kind of knew it was coming even before mm-hmm. Apple formally announced it. The rumors and the supply chain rumors had leaked enough that we were starting to size it up and write about it as if it existed. So this isn't anything new that we do with Apple. Maybe the timeline is a little more stretched out. You know, 3 years instead of 1 year. But it's a common phenomena.
And more like 4 years instead of 1 year. And it's really more like 4 years instead of 9 months. I mean, again, it's because of the number of people involved. In the past, Apple's development teams have not needed to be as large as the Apple Cars development team. And, you know, most of the time our leaks have come from the supply chain. But, you know, This is far, 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 far away from the supply chain. This is the information that we've gotten has all come from people that are working on the car and the people that they know.
Right, which is very different.
One interesting thing I saw over the weekend was that Daimler's chief executive, Dieter Nietzsche, told a German magazine that these Google and Apple were much more sophisticated with car technology than they had thought.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So maybe the car industry is now taking a different approach to Apple's entrance in or potential entrance into this market than, say, the smartphone makers did when the iPhone came along.
I have a quote here. He says, "Our impression was that these companies can do more and know more than we had previously assumed."
Yeah, I'm going to say that's on you, sir. In this case, Mr. Benz, whatever his name is.
Dieter Zitschi.
He was one of the people that was a little bit dismissive at first. Because, and not all of the automobile industry has been that way. Lots of folks in the automobile industry have said that, you know, Apple entering the market was going to be good for the electric car market, good for the autonomous vehicle market. And a lot of people have said that that they would be significant competitors. Some of them have made very dismissive and derogatory comments.
Yes, that's true. So, okay, so now back to I just forgot his name. The guy.
Zdebski.
Yes. So, I'm assuming that Apple had some sort of heads up that he was planning on leaving, which means that the hunt for his replacement is probably well underway.
Why would you assume that?
Because it makes me feel better about the project.
I would guess that the story leaked pretty soon after it took place internally. Now, I have no more evidence of that than you do with your assumption, but the fact that he's still there, or at least he was as of the journal's report,
which would have been like end of the week.
Yeah, it suggests that to me, at least, that that we're finding out about it soon after the folks at Apple found out about it,
and that he's leaving on good terms.
Probably.
Yeah, my assumption is if it wasn't on good terms,
he wouldn't still be there.
He wouldn't be there. Yeah. Right. All right. Well, I'm curious to see who takes his place. And my other assumption about this, Brian, is that you will be in a position where you're going to be able to find out before a lot of other people do. So good on you.
Thanks.
Yeah. There's another thing that I wanted to take a look at today. And that's, John, your take on Apple Watch and where it needs to go next. And for everyone that couldn't participate in our pre-show chat, John was talking about what it would take to make the Apple Watch thinner, which is one of the things that I'm assuming you really would like to see, excuse me, in the next version.
I would, especially since my wife has especially small wrists, and it would be nice for the Apple Watch to be thinner, I think, for a lot of women out there who would like to wear it gracefully and have, you know, thin watches have always been cool. You know, I remember in previous decades, you know, as watches got thinner and neater, that was the thing, right? The Apple Watch is not bad. I have a friend, a woman who's about my age who doesn't have particularly large wrists, and her 38 millimeter looks fine on her wrist, but it would be cool if it were thinner. And I started thinking about how, and I haven't done the analysis yet, but there's a little battery in there. I don't know how many milliamp hours it is. Does anybody remember? It's like 200 or 300 milliamp hours or something like that.
I don't remember.
And if it's not a big battery, and battery technology does not dramatically improve from year to year, we make small refinements over time, and that's why in the Apple MacBook, which came out early in 2015, the way to improve the battery was by improving the geometry by changing the size of the battery as it fit into conformal edges and squeezing more battery in there instead of improving the battery. You can do three things. You can improve the processor. You can improve the software to be less power hungry. You can make the battery squeeze into tinier spaces, and you can improve the battery technology intrinsically. So there's only a couple of those options available for the Apple Watch, because we tend, at least in my reading, want more from the Apple Watch in terms of its independence from the iPhone. I assume that when you walk into the Apple store and you try to buy one, the sales person says, you have an iPhone 5 at least, right, to pair it with. And you go, yeah, here it is. So Apple has some gains to be made by making the watch less dependent on the phone, although you would still use it for backup and configuration and things like that. But with the emphasis on Wi-Fi and watchOS 2, the emphasis on apps, poor app performance that people complain about, wanting to be having the watch to be more independent. There's some pressure on Apple to improve the battery life, and that weighs against slicing a millimeter or so off the thickness of the battery. I'm just picking a number out of the blue. So it's kind of a difficult situation for Apple. And so I was thinking about this the other day, and I kind of get the feeling, my gut instinct tells me we're not going to see an Apple Watch in 2016 that's half as thick. I just don't see it happening with the current state of the art. But I need to do a little bit of analysis and research and look at some photos and kind of size up what I'm thinking and maybe back that up with a little more quantitative stuff. It's all very loose right now. Just a thought.
I've got to take exception to part of your premise, though, John. There was, in fact, a movement towards small watches in the pre-smartwatch days. That was mainly in the quartz space. In the mechanical space, watches have remained thick and proud.
Oh, yeah. I look at movie stars and late night talk show hosts' watches more than I ever used to. I noticed that Stephen Colbert was wearing a big... We remember when Stephen Colbert had Tim Cook on? He wore an Apple Watch for the event. And then he went back to wearing this big clunky watch for months. And I noticed, I think it was 2 weeks ago, that Stephen Colbert is back to wearing his Apple Watch. And, you know, these big, thick, beautiful, clunky... You know, what do you call them? Lots of
complications
and buttons and everything are really popular.
Buttons,
yeah, buttons.
Even I
yeah,
need
right,
complications.
Right.
So, the interesting thing is, you know, I'm a mechanical watch guy, as you both may remember.
Yeah, that sounds vaguely familiar.
And. I enjoy a well-designed, thick mechanical watch. I think my Zenith is a little bit thicker. I know that I've compared the two, and I think my Zenith is a little bit thicker than the Apple Watch. Yet I still think the Apple Watch is too thick, and part of that is the size of it. When you've got a thick mechanical watch, it's usually going to be a larger device. Not always. Certainly not always, but it's usually going to be a larger device. And I've always felt that I was actually surprised that the Apple Watch was as thick as it was when it was produced.
Aspect ratio for the Apple Watch is wrong. The thickness to diameter ratio.
Yeah, I frankly would rather have the Apple Watch be a little bit larger.
Now, okay, so I went with the 38mm model, and I don't want anything bigger on my wrist. I would like this to be a little bit thinner, but it's not because I put it on my wrist and think, wow, it's like I'm wearing a bar of soap. It's because when I put this thing on and then go to put on, say, like a jacket, I always catch the watch on the sleeve up by the shoulder when I try to put the jacket on. And so I'm doing this stupid flailing thing, trying to get my arm to go into the sleeve. And it's just mildly annoying, especially if I'm, say, like out in the backcountry on a day-long hike where I can take this along. And it's windy, it's about to rain or snow, I need to get my jacket on, and I'm fighting trying to get my arm into the sleeve. I know, first world problems.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've become used to the Apple Watch's size and thickness.
Yeah, I have too.
Haven't thought about it until we started talking about that this morning. And I think one of my comments this morning, John, was that I'm not sure that a thinner Apple Watch has to come at the expense of the battery. Because
that's to be determined. It's something I'm thinking about and pondering, but yes, I will admit your thesis that it may not be completely tied to each other.
Yeah, and when you said that, Brian, I realized, yeah, I think you're right.
You mentioned before, Brian, there's something
sizes of other components.
And you mentioned earlier, Brian, about how maybe there's something headway to be made in the thickness of the display, not just the innards.
Nope.
No.
I was talking about the innards. Definitely didn't say anything about the display.
I talked about the display.
Ah.
I mean, you know, the taptic engine was the taptic engine for the Apple Watch in particular was a relatively new device. We have no idea if there is room for thinness there, or if there is room for other miniaturization in the world of chips and that thing that Apple does so much better than everybody else, which is, you know, make stuff thinner.
You know, there's another argument. There's another argument. It could be that Apple considers the first Apple Watch to be iconic. And maybe Apple says, this is the Apple Watch. This is the way it's going to be. We like its aspect ratio. It's iconic. We're going to improve it by, you know, improving the innards, giving it more battery life and more capability. But we're not going to change the outer shell. Maybe.
Are you just now meeting Apple? That's not what Apple does. Apple has never. I mean,
I know. Apple has not done that since
Steve Jobs returned.
There's another argument to be made. I mean,
well, it's a wrong argument.
But yeah. Well, you know, I think that because I want it thinner doesn't necessarily mean that everybody wants it thinner. As you said, there are people who have a predilection for thick mechanical watches. Maybe people consider the Apple Watch to be just perfect.
The noise has died down, but I think we forget that it was called thick when it was first introduced by a lot of folks.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, and you've heard me rant about trying to get my arm in my sleeve, and I'm sure there's plenty of people out there that are shaking their heads and wondering how it is I function in the world if I can't put a coat on while I'm wearing a watch. And they have a point. Nonetheless, I would like to see the watch get a little bit thinner.
I would too, actually.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be significantly thinner, but just a little bit.
How much? The thing is, how much? You know, the Apple Watch is not real thick to begin with. I don't know. I don't remember the number, but it looks to me like it's about 8mm thick. And if the battery is a significant part of the inside, which I think it is, and you started slicing even a millimeter off the thickness of the battery, you could cut the battery capacity by maybe 15%. And Apple wouldn't go for that, considering how much pressure there is to improve the battery performance and make it last long enough that you don't have to charge it every night.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
I'd like to see the display get closer to the edge.
I would like that too, yeah.
And it, me think is that that will eventually be one avenue for Apple to improve the internal space that it has to work with.
All right.
Know, maybe not.
I'm ready to see it. Bring it on. Yeah. Hey, we're out of time. So we have to wrap up yet again. But listeners, I'm curious, what do you think Apple needs to do or should do for features on the next Apple Watch? Let me know. You can send me comments on Twitter. That would be at TMO Daily. You can shoot me emails, observations@macobserver.com, and you can leave comments in the show notes. I will check all those places to see what you have to say. Brian, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, absolutely. Word.
Yep. It's always great to have you. And also, always great to have you here, John. Thank you.
You are very... Go Broncos. Welcome.
I don't know the words coming out of your mouth. Listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.